one off now. Just like herding cats around here.
Yeah, here's a video I have this YouTube channel. And you guys see this video here? Abortion is a woman's rights video. So a bunch of people have watched this, and some atheists have chimed in on it and encouraged me to watch these That's Humanism videos. He said, you need to watch these videos. I said, okay, so I responded to all four of them, and here's just a response to one of those videos. And this is kind of applying the biblical worldview approach to apologetics, and you'll see it's very easy to take these things apart.
Okay, I just wanted to continue on here and listen to the next video. It's only 2 minutes and 52 seconds long. This one is called, How Do We Know What Is True? Okay, so this is dealing with the realm of epistemology, knowledge. How do people know
this is not the first
what is true? Now, I haven't listened to this one yet, but I have a feeling I know where he's going to go. What we're going to be told is observation and science is the only reliable way to produce knowledge, which, of course, is going to betray a fundamental misunderstanding of both.
This guy is the head of the British humanist?
Stephen Fry is part of the British Humanist Association, I guess. I don't know. I've never heard of that particular group, but they've got a bunch of videos out there.
Yeah.
So.
He has a British accent. He sounds very smart. You know,
he does sound smart.
He sounds like the guy on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Heroes doesn't have a theory of knowledge and of the limitations of science, but we'll see. Maybe we'll be surprised.
How do we know what's true? Ever since human beings have been capable of thought, we have asked big questions about how the world around us works. Some people have thought that there is another reality beyond the one we can perceive through our normal senses, a supernatural world, where there might be ghosts and goblins, gods and demons. They have thought that
notice the very condescending way that that is put. The fact is there is a reality beyond the physical world that gives form and structure to the world that we live in. And God is the one who upholds by his providence and by his power. He upholds the universe in a law-like and orderly fashion. And here again, I'm just going to go ahead and step out on a limb here. We're not going to be given any kind of rational foundation as to why we can even do science. We're going to be told we can know things by the scientific method. That is where he's going with this. And we're not going to be given any...
By the way, if you guys ever want to read... How many of you here have ever heard of a man named Bertrand Russell? You heard of Bertrand Russell? He wrote the book called Why I Am Not a Christian. Okay, very famous book. I encourage people to read it. It's actually a very interesting book to read. But he also wrote this book, The Problems of Philosophy. Bertrand Russell was one of the sharpest minds that existed in the 20th century. He was a very smart man. This book, I read this years ago, and it blew my mind what this guy was willing to say in print. He admitted, okay, let me ask you this question. What will happen if I drop this? It's not just going to sit in midair? Are you sure? Okay, ready? All right. We'll do it again if I drop it? Okay. Russell, in this book, admits, in writing, we have no reason to believe that the future will resemble the past in terms of its law-like properties. No reason. He said, all we know is, in the past it's always done that, but we have no reason to believe that in the future... The same laws that govern nature today will govern it in 5 minutes.
You mean like the basic law?
Yes.
Like Newton's.
Of what?
Newton's.
Yeah, like Newton's, like gravity, physics, chemistry. Russell admits in the book, we have no reason as atheists to believe that nature will continue to obey the same laws into the future as they have in the past. And he says, if you argue, well, it's always been like that in the past, and it stands to reason it'll be that way in the future, Russell says that's a logical fallacy called begging the question. And he admits in the book, we have yet to seek for some principle which shall enable us to believe that the future will resemble the past. And I, as a Christian, am going, I know why it will. Because God told man, I want you to subdue the creation and take dominion over it. If it doesn't obey law-like properties, if it doesn't obey law-like physics, chemistry, gravity, then we wouldn't be able to do that. Science has come into existence everywhere Christianity's ever gone. Have you guys ever wondered, why is India such a devastated poor country? Have you ever wondered that? You know why that place is the way it is? Because of their religion. Hinduism does not believe the universe exists. They don't believe it's real. They think everything is Maya. It's all illusion.
Truth.
And so if you are born and raised in a society where you're taught the universe doesn't even exist, why are you going to study it and try to figure it out and cure diseases? Everywhere Christianity ever went, science flourished and developed because we have a high doctrine of creation. We believe man's natural inborn curiosity is part of the image of God. And we believe nature follows these law-like characteristics so that we can take dominion over it and study it. That's why, I'm sorry?
It's kind of funny because I heard that atheism is a product of Christian tolerance.
That's a good point.
You don't see atheism in the Middle East.
That's very true. Yep. That's a really, really good point. But yeah. Okay, so just listen to this. I would encourage you to watch all four of the That's Humanism videos, and then watch my responses, and you'll see the method's very easy for doing this.
Big questions regarding why science is possible. Questions that atheists and agnostics of past generations understood. You can't take these things for granted. You can't take the uniformity of nature for granted. You can't take the law-like properties of chemistry, physics, and mathematics.
See what I'm saying? The uniformity of nature. Do you guys understand what that concept means? Do you guys think gravity works over there in the corner? How do you know that? The only way you can know that is if God exists and he upholds the universe in a law-like fashion. If you're an atheist and you really do believe there's no such thing as order, there is no governing providence that holds things together, you would have to say, I don't know if gravity works over there. And yet, how did we get people to land on the moon? They had to assume the uniformity of nature. Russell admits, as an atheist, we have no basis to believe that. We have no reason at all to believe in the uniformity of nature. Other philosophers of past generations who were non-Christians have admitted the same thing. Have you all ever heard of David Hume? David Hume argued that you can't even know if the external world exists outside of your mind. He's like, okay, there's a pen, but I can't prove that there's actually a connection between my sensations and the pen itself.
He sounds like a sophist.
Yeah, yeah. He really was. And he said, in fact, I don't even know if the world behind me exists. But then he said, you know what? I would rather play backgammon with my friends than try to figure out whether their minds are real. You think? Okay. But the tough-minded non-believers, it really is amazing the things that they're willing to admit. In writing, and I would encourage you, if you've never, and you probably haven't read this, but The Problems of Philosophy by Bertrand Russell, this book is unbelievable to read, the things that he says in here. So, yes?
Yeah, I bought that off eBay cheap. I haven't read it yet. I haven't heard it recommended, but yeah. You can get that book pretty extensively.
Yeah.
But one point, the Big Bang, you know, that
yeah.
nothing exploded. Does that kind of fit in with this issue that you're talking about?
That nothing exploded?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even you know, modern cosmogony, they know the universe is not eternal. So it does raise the question, where did everything come from? Where did matter come from? It's not eternal. But yeah, the idea that nothing exploded into being.
Do they think it's not eternal because it's expanding? Or?
Well, they know that it started to exist a finite time ago.
I mean, oh, you mean it had a beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
And the laws of thermodynamics.
So not necessarily an end, but it did have a beginning. So
yes.
It's not eternal.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's not eternal into the past. Yeah. You got it. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's for granted. You have to offer a rational justification for those things. But I have a strong feeling we're not going to get that.
Knowledge can come from this source, from supernatural revelations, prophetic visions, or divinely inspired books. Others, the way to learn is by observing the world around us carefully and in detail.
They're not mutually exclusive categories. God has spoken. God does reveal things to man. And he has also revealed to us that we can, generally speaking, we can trust reason and we can trust our senses. Because he did create the universe and he does uphold it in a law-like fashion. And scripture says that man was created to take dominion over the earth, to subdue the creation, to study and figure it out. It's pretty ironic to me. He says, well, ever since we've been capable of thought, of course, he's thinking of an evolutionary perspective. As soon as our cerebral cortex got big enough for us to actually think in abstractions, of course, we think in abstractions and we do what we do as human beings because we are not animals. We are the image of God. God created man with a capacity and a desire to know, to understand, and more than anything, to have community.
Yeah, by the way, for the last 6 years at my church, we've done what are called Good News Clubs at a local elementary school. And one of the first things I teach the kids every year is, you are not an animal. I think that's a pretty important thing for them to know. You're not an animal. Okay, there is a vast difference between being the image of God and an animal, because those kids are taught evolution. They're taught that they are evolved gorillas, really.
Are you allowed to go into schools and teach them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. As long as it's still...
Now you're left with, why does matter behave in a law-like fashion? Where do those laws come from? How are they sustained over time? You can't reason from the past to the future, Bertrand Russell taught us. That's begging the question. You can't say, well, it's, you know, the law-like properties of matter, chemistry, physics, and math. They've always been that way in the past. So it stands to reason they'll stay that way in the future. Bertrand Russell said, you can't.
In here, he says, if you think that way, you're dumb. Because that is a logical fallacy called begging the question. That is assuming the thing you're trying to prove. And Russell, with this very, very sharp mind that God gave him, he understood that. And so in this book, he basically makes the case, science is not possible. Which is amazing that he actually put that in print.
Because, yeah. Go ahead.
We were talking to Cliff Jensen before we came down here, and he said how much he loved logic, a class in logic he took, and he thought, oh, I'd love to teach that up here. So if you're interested in that subject, you might put some pressure on him to maybe pull that together.
Yeah.
So, science is, you say, impossible?
If atheism is true, science would not be possible, yes.
Science is not possible because everything, 1 + 1 could not equal 2 tomorrow.
We would have no way of knowing that, yeah.
So, it's possible, it's just pointless, or...
You would have no, there's no reason to have confidence, yeah. What did you say that, Trinity?
To trust it.
Yeah, to trust that it will still be the case. That the law-like properties that are true now and in the past will still be true into the future.
You can use that to prove your point, to prove your fact, because if you're pointing to the fact that it's all random and it just happened, then that wouldn't be the case in the future.
Well, no. What he's actually saying is that we have no... Okay. Like, you... If I, okay. So what reason did I have to think that would go that direction instead of behind me?
Because it always has.
Well, what he's saying, and what lots of philosophers have said, and this is a huge problem for the philosophers, is that I don't have any reason to think that because this did happen, it will happen. It's called getting in. And then it's the same kind of thing, like, it kind of translates to moral philosophy and getting an ought from an is. Like, there's no connection. Like, it doesn't follow from the fact that this happened that it should happen or that it will happen.
Why wouldn't it?
Why would it?
Because if you're an atheist...
No, because there's no law, there's no principle, there's no reason that says things that happened in the past continue the same way in the future. That is an assumption that we have no right to make, that we have no reason, we have no justification for that assumption. But it's the assumption that almost all of reality and all of science... operates from. But it's a flawed assumption. Or it's an assumption that at least we cannot figure out a justification for.
You can say it's a flawed assumption, but it's worked so far.
Right, but there's no reason for it to work.
It's led to medicine and modern medicine.
Yeah,
right.
In the past, the thing is,
that is the problem. The assumption is that what has happened in the past will happen in the future, and we can't figure out why that makes sense.
Think about it from the perspective of an atheist. With someone like Bertrand Russell, the only thing he thinks that exists is matter. So what reason would he have to think that it's going to continue, that matter will arbitrarily continue to follow the same law-like characteristics that it's always had in the past?
I understand what you're trying to say, that just because it's happened in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future.
Right.
He talked about uniformitarianism.
Yeah.
I just... if I don't know, if you don't believe in God, I just don't see how, I just don't really see how that's relevant. If you don't believe in God, then that's all you have.
That's a very good point. That's a very, so is your point then that an atheist doesn't need to believe in God to do science? Is that what you're trying to say, or?
Well, I guess I'm trying to say that if you're an atheist, you live according to the laws of nature, I guess.
Right.
The laws of nature so far have led to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why wouldn't you?
The problem is that in that case, as the atheist, you are, instead of choosing to believe, and I guess I suppose put your faith in a being that has created and upholds things, if you are choosing to deny the existence of an external being, you are yet putting your faith and confidence in a principle that is arbitrary, that we can find zero justification for, which is that stuff I have observed in the past will continue in the same way in the future.
And that's what Russell's point is. Russell's the one who said that in an atheistic view of the universe, there's no principle by which we should proceed into the future thinking that the laws will stay the same.
Okay,
yeah.
But if you're an atheist, why does that matter? Why does it matter that there's no justification for it?
Because atheists do science all the time. And so ultimately, they have to do something that they know their worldview renders impossible. So the non-Christian, whatever form they take, is they're going to be literally a living, breathing, walking contradiction. They're going to be doing things all the time that completely fly in the face of their worldview.
Well, wouldn't atheists say things like, our purpose here is to achieve however much happiness we can while we're here, or something like that?
Sure.
So if that's what they're living by, then that's not really a contradiction. They're pursuing science for medicine.
But what it,
like,
yes.
Like I was saying, if they use the evidence from science to back their point as a fact that will be in the future, it would be contradicting what they hold true.
Yes, it would be. And also say, okay, I live for the greatest happiness for the greatest number. That's completely arbitrary. Someone else could come along and say, well, I live for the greatest pain for the greatest number. And it's just what I happen to do.
Yeah, well, why would that matter to an atheist?
If they're consistent, it wouldn't matter to them. But because they're made in the image of God, it will. You're right. You're the very consistently thinking atheist, it wouldn't matter. So what if it's a contradiction? I don't care about contradictions.
Okay.
Yeah, but as people made in the image of God, they will. I mean, Bertrand Russell, why does he identify that as a problem? Because he's made in the image of God. That's why. He knows this is real serious. Why is it that we can't justify arriving at general conclusions from individual observations? He admits we can't do that either. Because of the same reasons. The uniformity of nature can't be justified if only thing that exists is matter. We don't know that the universe is going to continue to obey these law-like characteristics. All we know is it's done it in the past. But I, as a Christian, I mean, listen, the Bible actually answers this directly, Genesis 8:22. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. I know that the future will resemble the past, because God told me it will. That's my answer. I just think it's so hilarious. You have these high-powered philosophers talking about inductive this, and we can't know about this and that, and based on our worldview, blah, 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 blah. And a little Sunday school child raises their hand and goes, I know why we can do science. Because God said that seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. And that God upholds the universe by his word so that we can take dominion over it. There's my answer. I'm just a little Sunday school child with my Bible open, sitting here. I got the answer. Lord Russell, I know why the future will resemble the past, because God told me it will. So that's what is so beautiful about the defense of the faith, is if you have the Bible in your mind and in your heart, you can answer the most high-powered philosophical objections that there are with simple citations from the biblical text. So, all right, let's try to get through this. I won't stop anymore.
That's called begging the question. That's begging the question. That is a logical fallacy. We want to know on what basis you proceed on the expectation that the future will be like the past in terms of its law-like properties. And if you can't give an answer to that, you can't justify science. I, as a Christian, can justify that. God has promised that summer and winter, the planting and harvesting and everything else will be sustained until the end of time. And man was tasked to subdue the creation. We wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't upheld in a law-like fashion. So here we're going to be told that the very tools that God gave us, reason and observation and experimentation, God gave us those things. He gave us a world with law-like properties so we can actually use those tools. We're going to be told that those tools stand by themselves for us to use to gain knowledge.
Forming ideas about why things behave as they do. Testing those ideas through experiments, refining them in the light of experience.
But all you can tell is how they behaved in the past. That doesn't answer the question how they'll behave in the future. And like I said, this is not, you know, just me being a Christian and saying this. The atheists that I've read on this topic understand. You cannot make that assumption. You have to offer a rational justification for it. Why do we proceed on the expectation that our chemistry experiments and that our observations of things will continue in a law-like fashion over time? There is no answer forthcoming. In fact, Bertrand Russell himself said, we have yet to find some principle which shall enable us to believe the future will be like the past.
Then testing them again. Out of all the various methods that people have tried to use to find out how the world works, observation, experimentation, and the testing of theories against evidence have the best track record.
That's the only way you can figure out how the world works. Operational science is something that Christians have created everywhere they've ever gone. Everywhere Christians have ever lived, we've studied the universe and have tried to figure it out. That's why the greatest scientists who ever lived were Christians. Were Christian theists. Isaac Newton and many others were Christians who understood that the universe is law-like and orderly, and we can study it and do experimentation, expecting the results of that to carry into the future. See, the atheist worldview, this humanist worldview, can't justify that. And again, there's still a minute and 50 seconds, or 40 seconds left in the video. Maybe they'll give us a rational justification for it, but Bertrand Russell couldn't. No other philosophers ever have. So I don't think we're going to hear about it. We'll see.
Prophets have predicted the end of the world on many occasions, but we are still here.
That's certainly true. Christian prophets have not, though. And the scriptures have never predicted the end of the world as if it was imminent and was going to happen right now. So,
ancient holy books contain a description of the universe which has turned out to be totally inaccurate. Oh. If asked to choose between taking a medicine and methods available in experiment, and one who has selected medicine for you based on his vision, you will probably not choose the medicine from the vision.
And of course, who would argue that from a Christian perspective? Again, I can see why an atheist might say something based on a vision, since they have no basis to believe that the biochemistry of the human body will react in the same way to certain medicines that normally in the past has cured it, because there's no reason to expect the future will be like the past in terms of its law-like properties, including biochemistry. So I can see an atheist might go to someone to get a vision. I, as a Christian, would definitely go with observation and go with what has worked in the past, because my God upholds the universe in a law-like fashion, and the scriptures promise me that he will continue to do that so that mankind can study the universe and subdue it for God's glory. But again, you know, this is common fare. We're not going to get an answer to the key questions here.
We may never know everything. But the testing of theories against evidence has proved itself again and again to be a reliable way to gain any knowledge about how the world around us works.
That's right. And it is Christianity alone that can justify doing that. Because an atheist view on the universe cannot justify the uniformity of nature over time. Why do you believe that the future will resemble the past in terms of its law-like properties? There is no answer to that question from the atheist perspective, because they really do believe in chaos and randomness, and yet we live in a world that's very orderly, that obeys law-like properties. This is the only reliable way, yeah. In a Christian view of the universe, it is the only reliable way to understand the way that things operate right now. And again, we're mixing categories here. Everything that he's saying has to do with knowledge of how things work right now. And again, this betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of the limitations of science. Science can't yield knowledge of anything, ever. All science can tell you is the way things work right now with probability. Until they have tested every possible scenario, you can't have quote-unquote laws, all you have are probabilities. So again, how are they using the word knowledge here? Knowledge is justified true belief. Science can't do that. You can't engage in inductive reasoning, which is what science is, and arrive at justified true beliefs. It's philosophically impossible. So,
through science, we have cured deadly diseases, created amazing...
Christians have cured deadly diseases. You act like, well, these people over there, are they haven't done it. Does anyone here realize that Christians are the ones who gave birth to modern science? It was not a secularist world that did this. We have cured deadly diseases, created amazing technologies. Did you know the MRI machine, magnetic resonance imaging, was created by a Christian? Was invented by a Christian? Yeah.
In technologies, and learn things about the universe that fill us with wonder. When we want to know what's true and what is false, there is no better method.
About the way things work, true and false in the ultimate sense has to be revelational. God has to show us those things. And, you know, look at the history of how humans have done since the Enlightenment with figuring out the way thing, what's true and false, what's right and wrong, and things like that. Look at how we've done. Look at the ocean of bloodshed.
One of the other videos, the guy talks about how much progress humans have made in terms of their understanding of morality and how much better we are than we were long ago. And you think, 20th century, what do you guys know what happened in the 20th century? World War I? Remember the World War I? What made World War I such a horrible war? That was the first war that was ever fought with this terrible new invention called the machine gun. Yeah, that's why, you know, what was it, 22 million war dead? And then everyone in the world was said, we're done with war, we're never doing that again. 19 years later, yeah, Hitler invades Poland, and then you have a war that makes World War I look small. And then you have the Holocaust, and you have the rise of communist ideology, and then you have, you know, the crimes committed against humanity by Stalin, by Mao in China. And, you know, my father fought in the Vietnam War, and that was about containing communism. We're not getting better. We're getting worse. The more secular people become in their thinking, the more innocent blood is spilled, especially, you know, why is our culture so drunk on sexual filth and abortion and a growing government? Because we're losing God again.
Wow. So a lot of that, man, almost 40 seconds of that is this music. Is there anything? That's just credits and stuff. Alright. Well, there you go. How do we know it's true? Observation. Empiricism. Science. Problem with this epistemological theory is that the theory itself cannot be justified by science. The theory...
You know who pointed that out for the first time? Aristotle. The theory of that all knowledge is gained through the senses. Aristotle was sharp enough to recognize, but the idea that all knowledge comes through the senses is itself not a sense perception. So the theory, if true, has to be false. So, okay, that doesn't work. You know who else eventually discarded empiricism? This guy. He really thought he could rescue it at the beginning of his life, the idea that all knowledge comes through the senses, but eventually he had to succumb to the same thing. The issue itself, that all knowledge comes through our senses, cannot be proved by your senses. And so therefore, if the theory is true, it renders the theory false. But that's what all non-Christian worldviews do. They all implode on themselves.
Are you talking about just the five senses? Or
yes.
Can you try and broaden your definition of senses before you tackle that question?
No, just the five senses. Yeah.
So you can't...
That pulls out the entire realm of...
This
abstract thought and intellect.
Yes.
You can't include, like, the sense of the passage of time. Like, that's something you sense, but that's not one of...
They could do that. I would grant that to them. Sure, you can have that too.
Well, that's just an example. Like, we don't really... The five senses don't really cover everything.
Yeah, that's true. And there's a whole another... That's one school of thought, and then there's another, the rationalist school of thought, that everything is just based on reason and not... so much sense. See, as a Christian, though, I can trust both. My reason and sense perception are the tools for dominion that God gave me. That's why I trust them. I, generally speaking, trust my senses. Generally speaking, trust my reasoning insofar as it conforms to God's word and revelation. I know I'm fallen and fallible. But I trust those things because those are tools that God gave us to take dominion. They can't be the standard in and of themselves, which is what the non-believer is trying to do. So, okay. How much time do we have left here? Are we about out of time? Oh, do we? Okay. All right. If you have your hand out there, look at page 3 on the next handout. I think it says at the top there the first bold heading. This is under Nuclear Strength Apologetics Part 1. Three vitally important things which no unbelieving worldview can account for. These are really important things for us to remember. The first thing is laws of logic. The correct way of thinking in order to make sense out of the universe. All forms of non-Christianity cannot account for laws of logic.
Which one are you on?
On page 3 of...
the very bottom
yeah.
of Nuclear Strength Apologetics
yeah.
Part 1.
Nuclear Strength Apologetics Part 1. It says 003 Nuclear Strength Apologetics Part 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Three vitally important things which no unbelieving worldview can account for. Yeah, I know. My accounting system got messed up when I was putting all this together. Yeah, it says the handout we're on is 03, Nuclear Strength Apologetics Part 1. All right, and we're on page 3 of that one.
As for the laws of logic, what would you say to a rationalist worldview or something where... where you are actually essentially worshiping reason, which is kind of what happened in the Enlightenment, was most everyone kind of went that direction. And even as far back as Plato is the intellect is the ideal. I mean, you have so Plotinus is more like the one is, you know, is both beauty and truth and true intellect. Plato is even more just truth is, you know, it's intellectual truth, it's not physical, you know, he essentially rejects physical
Plato.
Yeah.
Remember how did he try to explain everything? Do you remember what he did to try to explain how can we make sense out of the material realm? Remember what he appealed to?
Well, he appeals to lots of Plato, like a lot of others, appeals to or ends up all like approaching monotheism or henotheism is what it is technically. But my point is it's not Christianity. It's a deity, but it's not a Christianity.
Right.
But it's still theistic, which, and it explains, or it explains those laws of logic by appealing to that higher being
that's
that
right.
defines reason.
He was sharp enough to see that. Yeah, and remember his whole idea of the two realms of existence. There's the realm of copies, and then there's the realm of ideals or forms. There is some truth to that, but when asked, okay, well, Plato, how do you know about this? He said, well, let me tell you a myth I made up.
Yes.
I mean, that's it. That's all he could do. But he understood there's got to be something that transcends this world to give form and structure to it.
Right.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to understand it.
Right.
So.
So anyway, but that's just my question is, no unbelieving worldview. I mean, obviously he's believing in something, but every worldview is believing in something as well. So there are worldviews that are not Christian worldviews, but that get enough of it, right? Can see enough of it that there's something. So like Plato, which obviously, and Plato was clearly very brilliant and wise. You know, Augustine is hugely influenced by Plato. So much of Christianity is influenced by Plato. but it's not actually...
They can't account for it without being arbitrary.
Right.
Because all he has to do, all he can do is... Okay. Plato was, you're right, was one of the smartest human beings I've ever heard of. I mean, he really did understand. He's like, you know... I mean, think about how smart this guy is. He looks at trees, he looks at ducks, and he's like, how do I know what that is? How am I able to classify objects into certain categories like that? He said, well, we must have knowledge of perfect duckness somewhere, perfect treeness somewhere. There's got to be this idea that enables us to categorize things in a certain way. You see, the whole idea of classifying objects, you can't do that if materialism is true. If atheism is really true, we wouldn't be able to use abstract concepts like that really at all. So Plato was sharp enough to realize that there's got to be something behind everything that gives it its form and its structure so that we can understand it. And even like logic and thinking, there's got to be a standard of thinking. Now, he didn't know who the true God was, but he understood whoever that is, he's the one that gives form and structure to everything. So, but all he could do in terms of what he knew about him was make up myths and tell stories about being in a cave with a shadow behind him and everything. You all, I'm sure, have heard that story. But all forms of non-Christianity, though, are gonna fall under the weight of having to justify all these basic things that everybody takes for granted. So, yeah, that's a good question. Laws of logic, the uniformity of nature. Do you guys understand what that concept is? The consistent law-like fashion in which the world around us behaves. Laws of nature do not arbitrarily change. Do you guys understand that? I mean, it really is a very important thing to understand. The reason we're able to do science is I know that the gravitational pull of the Earth is uniform over space and over time into the future. Okay, it's only because I know the true God that I can know for sure that those laws will stay in place the way they are right now. And the third thing, absolute morality. There are things that are always right and always wrong in all places for everyone. Now, here's the thing. You see the next thing in the handout? Unbelievers believe in all three of these things, even though all three of them make no sense given their own worldview. Okay? Just skip the first illustration. Go to the example down there. When Gordon Stein asked Greg Bahnsen about the problem of evil, Bahnsen's response was shortened to the point. He said, my answer to the problem of evil, Dr. Stein, is that in your worldview, there is no problem of evil because there's no standard that exists by which to call anything evil. And at the end of the debate, yeah, yes, sir.
I'm sorry, but can you explain one more time why the laws of logic don't line up with atheist worldview?
Because the laws of logic are just as dependent on the law-like characteristics of matter and the law-like characteristics of chemistry, physics, and thought as everything else is.
Why?
Why? Well, yeah. think about it. If the laws of logic if they were really arbitrary, if they were just human conventions, then we would be able to contradict ourselves. It's only if things exist and are maintained in their existence and their present state, and they're going to continue that way over time, that logic can remain true.
Okay, so the same concept in uniformity of nature.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. They're intimately connected to one another. Okay, and guys, folks, the reason I'm recommending a book, this is high-powered stuff. I mean, you're going to have to do some thinking if you read this book, but Russell realizes all this, but it is hard. I mean, the first book I ever read, one of the first books I ever bought was Why I'm Not a Christian by Bertrand Russell. I wanted to read it, and I had to buy a dictionary to read it because he used so many words I didn't know what they meant. But once I understood what he was saying, I could see the fallacies in it and the problems with it, but... This book is fascinating because he realizes this all sounds like real heady stuff, but once you get it down to like a street level, you can talk to people so easily about this kind of stuff. But you do need to get the concepts down. But yeah, and this is another. This is a fantastic book. Jason Lyle does that very thing. He like this book, The Ultimate Proof of Creation, is really just about how to do apologetics and how to do worldview analysis. And stuff like that. It also has a whole two chapters on logical fallacies, which are really, really helpful. And at the end, he has a bunch of responses to emails that people have sent him and how he uses the method to respond to those emails. Okay. At the end of the debate between Stein and Bahnsen, it was beautiful. In Bahnsen's closing statement, he stood at the podium and said, okay, if there are no laws that are absolute, then I can just pull out a gun and say, okay, Dr. Stein, make my day. Is there a God or not? And if he says, oh, no, you can't murder me because there are laws, Well, then he's made my day because he's shown that the atheist worldview is not correct. But if he says, oh, well, morality is all by convention and personal stipulation, then I'll just pull the trigger, it's all over, and I win the debate anyway. You see what he's saying? And then Boston said to the audience, you all would not expect me to win the debate in that fashion, would you? No, absolutely not. You came here expecting rational interchange. I don't think we've heard much from Dr. Stein. So literally, the non-believer has nothing really to fire with. The only thing they can fire against us with is stuff that they're borrowing from the Christian worldview. Everything they say, if they ever say, I think people ought to be this way. My friend Mike, in that Facebook exchange, we talked a lot about ethics and morality. He kept saying, well, I think that everyone should be kind to their neighbor. And I would respond with, well, I can understand why I would think that as a Christian. That's the golden rule. That's from Leviticus 18. I don't understand why you think that, though. That's a phrase I would encourage you guys to remember that. When you're talking to people that aren't believers, and they say, well, I think that people should respect each other. You need to train yourself to say, I can understand why I would think that as a Christian, but I don't understand why you think that. Make them justify the things they're saying. Don't let them get away with borrowing things from the true worldview that are made mincemeat out of it in their own worldview. You see what I'm saying? Everything that they try to throw at you is going to be borrowed capital.
So key words there are ought and good and evil, bad. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ought. Anytime someone uses should, I think people should this, you got to stop immediately. Well, why? I mean, I'm genuinely, sincerely wondering. You said you don't believe in the Christian God, you don't believe in the Bible. That's fine. But then you said we should do certain things and we shouldn't do other things. Would you tell me why? And why you'll see them struggle. You see, and the thing is, what they're really struggling with is the existence of the God that they know. Why do they know that they ought to be kind to people? Because God created them. And God wrote that law in their hearts. But their worldview, if it were true in principle, would make respecting others and being kind to others meaningless. Okay? So you're really dealing with people that are in the image of God, but they're suppressing the knowledge of God. They're really like Adam in the Garden of Eden. What did Adam and Eve do when they heard God coming after they ate the fruit? They're hiding. That's really what they're doing. And doing apologetics, which you're really... Think of it like this. I always think of if I'm talking to someone like that kid at the orthodontist office, I'm basically reaching over there and ever so gently grabbing him by the arm and trying to pull him out from behind the tree. Okay? You know you're naked and you're just hiding from the God that you know is there. And why are they hiding? Because they love their sin. They just want to keep on sinning. Okay? Always remember that. Unbelief, the rejection of the true God, the rejection of Christ has nothing to do with facts or evidence. It's about a love for sin. Like you said, you can only serve one master. And Jesus said, you love one and hate the other. And if your master is sin, you're going to hate the true God. And so our job really is trying to remind them of what they already know in the deepest part of who they are. But then we want to call them to repent and believe. Okay, and that's what I told that kid in our email exchanges afterwards. I said, there's a reason why your worldview is not able to give a rational justification. He even said when he was pro-life, I'm like, but your worldview gives you no reason to be pro-life. Now, I know why you are. You are now because you're created in the image of God, and you know that basically it's wrong to kill innocent unborn children. You know that because God made you. But don't you want to have a reason to really believe that you should be pro-life? You need to repent and come to Christ and believe in him and be saved so that you don't just believe that arbitrarily. So
this is a serious subject, but I kind of got amused thinking that if you saw him on the street and you said good morning, you could say, what do you mean by good? In my worldview.
Right. What is good? Good based on what standards are? Yeah. Standard of God's character or what? Yeah. Okay, now some people are relativists. Now, have you all ever met any relativists or know any relativists? All morality's relative. Okay? Have you ever heard the statement, that's true for you but not for me? Yeah, I had someone actually say that to me at work many years ago, that Christianity is true, it's true for you, but it just doesn't work for me. It's true for you, but not for me. Now, such claims can easily be shut down. If someone says that, all truth is relative, you can ask them, is that statement itself true? That all truth is relative? You see, man can't help himself. He's going to make a truth claim one way or the other. Even if the statement they're making is there's no such thing as truth, what are they saying? That statement is itself true, right? So if someone makes a statement which, if true, renders the statement false, then it's easy to point that out to them. Let me give it a working illustration of this. I had actually just had this conversation with one of my coworkers who was a fellow programmer. We had exchanged books. She gave me a book on how the Irish saved civilization. It was a very interesting book, and I gave her a book on the Apostles' Creed by a Christian. And so she read the book, and she was pretty unhappy with, you know, the absolute truth claims of Christ and all this stuff. And, well, that's true for you, but not for me. So then we get on this conference call, and we're talking about this big computer system that we're all working on, trying to fix all the problems with it. And this was a huge conference call. There were business unit owners from different parts of the country who were testing this system we were working on. They're telling us, yeah, well, this doesn't work, and this doesn't work, and this doesn't work. And then we finally got off the conference call, and we had written down all these problems with the system that we needed to fix. And when we got off the call, I leaned over the table and said to everyone there, all my fellow coworkers and my boss, I said, you know what I should have told them? I should have told them the system works fine, and that's true for me, but not for you. And they laughed at how stupid that was. I'm like, but don't you see you guys are doing that with the biggest questions that face human beings in this world? Now, what if I had said that to them, to all these business unit owners? So the system works fine. Quit telling me it doesn't work. It works fine. That's true for me, but not for you. And they probably would have said, yeah, and you working here is true for you, but not for us. You see the point? So don't let people get away with saying things like that. True for me, but not for you is really a very, very foolish thing to say. Okay. Let's push on to page 4 there. Look at... at the bottom part there, you see where the bold heading in the middle of the page, it says Greg Bahnsen. Greg Bahnsen said, I love this, that a debate over the existence of God is as absurd as a debate over the existence of air. Just imagine it. Profound and articulate reasoning. Cross-examination on the part of the debater denying the existence of air. And yet, to make his argument against the existence of air must exist. For the debate itself to even take place, both participants must be huffing and puffing air in and out of their lungs. And thus, for the opponent of air's existence, his arguments can only be valid if they're wrong. And thus, they are wrong. And think about this, folks. What would you think if someone walked up to you and said, I don't believe in words? First of all, you wouldn't believe them, would you? And secondly, you would not go get a dictionary and say, no, see, words exist. See, here's the first word, second word in a dictionary. You wouldn't do that. It's the same thing with the existence of God. When people tell me I don't believe in God, I don't believe them. Now, they've suppressed the truth enough that they've convinced themselves that they don't believe in God. Yes, but in their heart of hearts, they do know God. Okay, let me give you a concrete example of what I'm talking about. Here's an example. Let's say a woman has a son, and he is an absolute hellion of a child, okay? At school, he's gotten in trouble for everything. He is constantly getting detentions. He's constantly getting called into the principal's office. And this kid is absolutely incorrigible. He steals other kids' lunch money. He bullies people. He hits the girls. He's disrespectful to his teachers and everything else. And the mother is constantly coming to the school to meet with the administration, to meet with the teachers, and you guys have had it out for Johnny ever since we moved here, and everyone's against my son, and that he's innocent, and everyone's falsely accusing him of all this stuff, and she really believes that. She really is saying this, and really is trying to defend Johnny. And yet, at home, she would never leave Johnny in the same room alone with her purse. Does she believe Johnny's innocent? She's convinced herself in one way that she believes he is, but in her heart of hearts, her actions betray the reality. She knows that he can't be trusted. That's exactly what people do with God. That's what all non-believers do with God. They say, I don't believe in God. You know, I had a guy say once, and so do you believe that there is a God? Never met him. Never met him. And yet they live their life as if he exists. People do science. People expect their car to start when they turn it. People expect the toothpaste to come out of the tube when they squeeze it. They believe in all these things. They appeal to moral absolutes that they expect everyone else to know about already. Have you ever noticed how little kids do that? I mean, every one of my kids, all 9 of them, the ones that can talk, I was here first. That's mine. You cut. You stole that from me. They all know that certain things are wrong. And yet, you could, if you were an atheist in an atheist household, well, there's no such thing as right and wrong, Johnny. You're just a bag of biological goo, and there's really no such, there's no transcendent standard. So just always remember that. Any objections, any arguments that are brought against the Christian faith are always going to be borrowing from the Christian faith. All right, what we all take for granted there at the bottom. Number one, absolute morality. God makes the rules of what is right and wrong. If we are nothing but evolved pawn sludge, then we can make our own rules. So ask the secularist, how do you decide right from wrong? Now, Josh, you mentioned one of these. Morality is what brings the most happiness to the most people. That's called utilitarianism. Many people hold that view. Whatever brings the greatest happiness to the greatest number. But in an evolutionary worldview, why do we have an obligation to promote happiness? What
is
isn't
an
that?
Obligation or just a...
Well, that's what utilitarianism holds.
Yeah.
That there is an obligation to provide the most happiness to the most people.
Okay, but does it have to be an obligation? Can someone not just switch that?
Well, it's not utilitarianism. Then it's not a moral system if there's not any kind of obligation.
But it would be arbitrary.
Yes.
From their perspective, though. It's just... Why isn't that which is good that which brings the most pain? Couldn't someone just assert that? Like you said, they could just stand up and say, well, that's what I think. Also, have you ever thought about this? How is happiness even quantifiable? I mean, do you have like a happiness thermometer on your shoulder? I've got 50 units of happiness and he's only got 40. So whatever I'm doing to him is okay because it's bringing me more happiness than him. Okay, you can't even measure happiness either. The point being, it's completely arbitrary. It would also lead us to having to condone the moral correctness of anything perpetrated by larger numbers of people against fewer, as long as more people are made happy by it.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, you have arguments because of that problem. We have, you know, then more and more quantification, I guess, of happiness and different kinds of happiness and whether happiness is... Mm-hmm. You know, true happiness is your first order and second order desire and all of those sorts of things coming, whether it makes me happy to go get drunk all the time, well, that's going to destroy my liver and make me die. So maybe that isn't actually bringing me the most happiness. Maybe bringing me the most happiness is not drinking.
Yeah, and some people derive happiness from really weird things too. Marquis de Sade, this came up in the debate with Bonson and Stein, Stein said, whatever brings the most happiness to the most number, that's what is good. And Bonson said, there was a French guy, an intellectual named Marquis de Sade, who enjoyed torturing and mutilating people.
He's the only atheist writer I've heard, atheist, agnostic, whatever, non-Christian writer I've read who actually made sense to me.
Yeah.
Because he was like a pornographic artist or something.
Yes.
Like, there's no God... We can do this and this and this and this with young morals.
Yeah.
And he was, like, consistent about it.
Another one you would like is Nietzsche, if you ever read Friedrich Nietzsche.
He's got the big mustache.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We had this conversation.
Yep.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have some of Nietzsche. Yeah, I haven't actually...
What you said about the happiness, what's that called again?
Utilitarianism.
Yeah, that sounds mm-hmm. like it could lead to, like a pure democracy, which could be, like,
yeah.
really, really bad for minorities and...
Mm-hmm.
I can see how that's dangerous.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yes. Yeah, you know, Nietzsche is one of those atheists who is very serious in his atheism. My favorite Nietzsche quote ever is, he actually said this in a book. He wrote, I fear that we are not yet fully rid of God because we still have faith in grammar. What he's saying is laws of grammar that govern, that are abstract, non-material laws that govern the way we write words would not have any basis to exist if God wasn't here. So while he's sitting there writing, he's realizing there's these abstract, non-material laws I am following.
Yeah, he's a really angry person.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, and he writes beautifully, and it's so tragic.
It is. And yet he's so consistent with his atheistic perspective. But that, to me, is the ultimate expression of consistency. We're not yet rid of God because we still have faith in grammar. We still believe that there are these laws that even govern the way we write. And you think...
Writing that just like
fuming. Yeah, just like... Even to write it, it makes me mad. Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, the last thing on the bottom of the page there, on page 4... Morality is just electrical impulses in the brain. Okay, question, why should anyone fall with them? Okay, we all have different electrical impulses in our brains. Some might say laws of morality are conventions adopted for the benefit of society. But without these laws, we'd have disorder. And without these laws, we'd all act like animals. But that's what your worldview says we are anyway, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. There are atheists who have said that. Well, if we didn't have laws, we might act like animals. It's like, well, that's what you say we are anyway. So, consider a secularist who expresses outrage at a violent crime he sees a story about on the news. And he says, I can't believe someone would do that to a little child. That person should be put in jail. You can just as easily point out, what are you complaining about? In your worldview, that's just natural selection. The strong kill the weak, and that's how the strong survive. Survival of the fittest. There's your worldview in all of its glory. What do you care about a guy killing a child? The strong kill the weak. Okay, another application of this illustration about murder. Why aren't people outraged when a hawk kills a mouse? Or a snake kills a chipmunk? But they do get outraged when a big man kills a little child. If they were consistent, they wouldn't care. Right? I mean, do we put bears in jail when they catch an antelope for murder?
You don't think you could make a...
Whatever they eat.
You don't think you could make a societal argument for natural selection of a man killing a child? Because that's the next generation that's preserving the society.
You could, but without an absolute standard, it would just be another arbitrary statement.
Yeah, it's still there, though.
Yeah. They could say that, but I would just keep. It's just you're just like Columbo. Did you tell me why? You know, you guys probably have no idea who Columbo even is. You guys know who Columbo is?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Just one more question.
Just one more question for you. But why? But why? But why? But why? Okay. Well, this atheist thinks that we should be kind to children. Many atheists have thought that. In fact, there's a Peter Singer from I forget what Ivy League school he's at, Princeton. Thinks that it's okay to kill children up to the age of 3 if you just decide you don't want them. And I say, that's very consistent with that perspective.
In an Ivy League school?
Yes. Singer? Yes.
Singer?
Peter Singer.
What is it? Something.
It's pretty consistent.
It is. And he himself has said...
He's a utilitarianist. I don't know. I've read him in more philosophy, but...
He's consistent enough, though, because if you're defining life based on convenience...
Mm-hmm. I read an article, in fact, one of my most watched videos was responding to an article written by a feminist named Mary Elizabeth Williams, and the article was titled, So What If Abortion Ends Life? She just embraces it. Hmm. Yeah, is it murder? Yeah. Who cares? My life's more important. And you just go, okay, I appreciate the consistency. She even says in the article, well... What is it that going down a 6-inch birth canal makes you something that you weren't before? Like, we've been saying that for 40 years. And now she's finally saying it, going, we just need to bite the bullet and just say, yeah, abortion takes life. Who cares? So what? That's a life worth sacrificing.
We could kill
her. Exactly.
Yeah.
What I said in the video was, I said, I just want to say to Mary Elizabeth Williams' living children, I would sleep with one eye open if I were you, because if you get in the way of her hopes and dreams and aspirations, she might just take a shotgun and blow your head off while you're sleeping, because you cost too much money. It's the same thing with, you know, well, if a woman can't take care of that child, then she has the right to terminate it. Hey, I have 9 kids, okay? We go through 14 gallons of milk every week, okay? Yeah, people, I mean, how many times...
That's like a gallon and a half per kid.
It is. Yeah, I'm serious. Every time I go to the store, what happened? Did old Bessie die again? Like, no, I have a whole bunch of kids that drink a lot of milk. But if I was consistent, though, couldn't I say, you know, man, the price of food is going through the ceiling, and I can't afford 9. I think I'd do much better. I put the numbers to it, and I'd do much better with 7. Can I take 2 of them out, especially the ones that eat the most and blow their heads off? Obviously not. Obviously not. But if you were consistently an atheist and a utilitarian, hey, we'd be a lot happier if we could eat more. Our happiness is greater than the sadness that would come to those two. Well, how can you judge that? Because I have the power to do it, and I've got the 12-gauge shotgun. So these are things, all you're trying to do with whatever form non-Christianity takes is try to force them to be consistent with their own stated beliefs. And once you learn how to do that, it really becomes quite easy. If you learn how to ask the question, why, and also point out, anytime they borrow something from your perspective, well, I understand why I would say that, but I don't get why you're saying it, though. You think people should do what? Be kind to people? Well, why? I mean, isn't it usually the real ruthless animals that tend to survive and pass on their DNA? And
What if they said something like, well, we're in a society that values kindness, so being kind is
not murder. I would say...
Being kind is...
It's an evolutionary advantage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say, do you think that we should have gone to war with Germany? And do you think that we should have had the Nuremberg trials? I mean, we went over there, we enforced our morality on them. You mean, have you ever studied the Nuremberg trials? If you've never studied that, you need to watch some documentaries about the Nuremberg trials after World War II ended. The Nazis defended themselves with that very argument. We followed the laws of our land. The German Supreme Court said Jews are not humans. So what higher court is there? Who are you guys from the West and the other side of the world to come over here and shooting at us and imposing this morality upon us?
I know that they, obviously, their methods were darkened, but didn't they profess Christianity? Like, the Nazi soldiers carried a pendant that said, God is with us.
No. Well, they may have professed it, but obviously they were living grossly inconsistent with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's super inconsistent.
Yeah.
It kind of blows my mind that you could carry that with mm-hmm. you and then turn around and say,
yeah,
it, to defend yourself in court away from that. And
some people think that what they're doing is for God, though. And it's like, oh, this is what. Only because I watched Kingdom Minds, and a few of the people were just like, yeah, God told me to kill her, so that's what I did. And it's just like, how do you make your God be my God in different realms?
Yeah. There's a big difference between professing to hold to something and consistently doing so. And that's why people say, well, you guys, you know, have to answer for the Crusades and answer for the Inquisitions and answer for this and that. And I'm like, the people that engage in the Crusades have nothing to do with biblical Christianity whatsoever. Nothing. There's
power.
I'm sorry?
It was a thirst for power. There's other motives underneath that mm-hmm. where they're using Christianity as a face in order to get their job done.
Exactly. Plus, how did the Christians in the Bible do conquest for the kingdom of God? By preaching, by loving, by persuading, by arguing for the faith, by doing evangelism. They didn't go and hold a sword under someone's throat and be baptized or die. Okay, they didn't do that. That's not biblical Christianity. See, so when people come at me with the Crusades and the Salem witch trials and everything else, I just say those are people who profess to be Christians living inconsistently with the Bible. Now, if you would like to tell me how was the Holocaust inconsistent with an atheistic and Darwinist view of social policy, how is that inconsistent? How is what Stalin and Lenin and Mao Zedong and Pol Pot and the communists, when they murdered their people en masse, how is that inconsistent with atheistic principles? It's not. Okay, so people in the name of God have done all kinds of crazy things. But the fact is, if someone loves the word of God and loves the Lord and wants to be consistent with it, they're not going to go out killing people, obviously. In fact, Christians have a very long history of building hospitals and orphanages, of being pro-life, of doing the greatest acts of charity that have ever been done. Have been done by Christians, not by atheists. I mean, you won't see atheists building hospitals and things like that. So,
there's this attitude going around in our society, can't we just get along kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen these bumper stickers that say coexist, and it has the different world religion symbols on it? And I think, boy, would I like to talk to that person. You know, right. Did they invite a cannibal over for dinner? Cannibals eat them, you know? Are we supposed to get along with a cannibal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, their views are just as valid as ours are.
Yeah. or a Muslim who is consistent with the Quran and the Hadith, which orders them to kill infidels if they won't convert to Islam, to kill them. That makes me a little uneasy. Okay. Do you guys have any questions? We only got like 3 minutes left, but any thoughts or questions? I would encourage you to read through the stuff. I'll send you, these are actually, that was 7 sermons that I did. So, but if you listen to all of them together with the handouts, I think the picture is much more clear. And once you have that confidence, though, it really is easy to talk to people about the gospel and ask people if there is a God and if there is a heaven, do you think you would go to heaven when you died?
I'll send you a link to the other videos on that YouTube.
Yeah.
Questions? No, that's a lot. It's taking me a while to get used to some of these concepts. So you have to think of better.